Before we return to the Torah's passage on how to recognize a false prophet, which God wants us to use, and we're in Devarim 13. I'm going to read through it one last time. I want to offer to John and those of you who have said that they would prefer that I go back to the Torah one other thing to think about. And that is that everyone who is part of the covenant is part of the covenant because they've come to know Yahweh and they've come to understand what he's offering and they have acted upon it in accordance with the guidance and instruction that Yahweh has provided in his Torah. That would be consistent of 100% of those who want to hear me talk more about the Torah. And every single one of you has either read or been shown translations and insights found in yadayah.com, the intro to god.org, or even the archives of these various programs. The information is available. And when it comes to those who are seeking for the first time to come to know Yahweh and are in the process of questioning their religion, my response to them is almost always the same, which is that asking me questions is a bad way to go. Trying to find my qualifications, of which I'm going to claim none, is not the right way to go. The right way to go is just to dive in. You know, if you want to understand the language, go and read An Intro to God, .org. If you want to understand who Yahweh is, what he has done, what he's offering, and have absolute proof that Yahweh is God, the one and only God, then jump into yadayah.com. If you want absolute proof that Christianity is false, then read questioningpaul.com. But the faster you turn away from me and turn to the evidence and directly to Yahweh for education, the better. And for those now who have already become members of the covenant, well, I know we all like to gather together and we like to listen, and the spoken word is a marvelous tool. And through these oral presentations, we go much deeper into the process and into the insights than we do in the written text, much deeper. The fact is that we're all better off, including you, John, reading yadayah.com, reading An Introduction to God.org, and coming to be directly reliant on Yahweh and not in any way reliant on me. We have my good friend Kirk on the line. Kirk, what do you think about all of this?
Well, that's why I kind of called. I know it kind of, you feel buried sometime in all this mess when you're talking about Paul and all, but
yes.
In your defense, I mean, when you do this third hour, I try to open up Questioning Paul. We have it in print form. Terry prints them all up for us. Mm-hmm. So I can take notes off to the side, but in all fairness, when you're talking about Paul, you're also quoting Chabacook. You're also mm-hmm. talking about the covenant in great detail, and the mm-hmm. counter and the debate going back and forth, I think is tremendously valuable because most Christians would never sit down and think about what they really believe in, or even when you go to the Matanyah and you talk about the Olivet Discourse and so forth.
Right.
I mean, no one puts it in this terms. There is no one out there putting it in this terms. It's just, it's a messy thing. So is, I do feel the same way when we talk so much about Muhammad. I mean, you just get sick. I mean, when we talk about the government, you just get sick. I mean, this last couple of days have been just disgusting. I mean, I don't know if anybody's going to walk away from our stuff saluting the flag and kissing the government, but what does it take to have somebody? I know it's overwhelming.
Yeah, let me speak to two things that you've brought. In fact, I would speak to three things that you brought up. For 3 years now, I've been begging people to come to realize that their government is corrupt, that it's counterproductive, that it's immoral, that it's working against their interests. And occasionally a story comes up that makes that conclusion irrefutable. This the CIA's story of widespread terror and of torture being done around the globe at the behest of the President of the United States and covered up is a great example as to why God wants us to disassociate from our country, to walk away from it. We couldn't have been given a more effective story to help explain God's position on this.
Absolutely.
I know it's a mess. Yeah, I know it's disgusting. But, you know, you read things in the Torah that are disgusting because, human behavior is reprehensible and God brings it up to say, don't do this. Now, on Islam, and by the way, on country, on don't being patriotic, don't support your CIA, don't support your military, don't support your police. These are all counterproductive. Don't support your politician. I don't think there's anybody else out there doing this. Particularly no one doing it with the purpose of saying, God wants you to walk away from these things, and here's why. Now, if there's somebody else doing it, man, I'll gladly stop. I just don't know if there's anybody else doing it. And now let's go to Islam. There are four or five people out there, IQ Al-Rasuli is a strong voice, that's exposing and condemning Islam. But even though there's a lot of people doing it, six or seven people doing it, Islam is the most destructive force in the world today. It is the force that Yahweh has predicted that is going to attack and try to destroy Israel.
Yes.
It's the most satanic religion man has ever conceived. And we have thousands upon thousands of people in the media, in politics, in the military, and in academia, and in religious circles lying on behalf of the religion. If we don't counter that, who will?
Well, in addition, though, these people who do this also don't give you any viable alternative to turn to. They don't say, it's one thing to say this is bad, but there's a better path. No one who says there's a better path. They just say, we're going to fix it. Let's vote Republican or something. I mean, come on, people.
Look at my good friend, and I dearly love IQ Al-Rasuli. I have the utmost respect for the man. He is so intelligent and so courageous and so effective. But when he realizes, as I do, that the ultimate Achilles heel of Islam is its foundation, its claim that it is a confirmation of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and that Jesus and Moses and Abraham were Islamic prophets, and that it's an Abrahamic religion. That is the Quran's foundation. It's its only claim of credibility. He and I both know that that's 100% untrue. I mean, it's the antithesis of the truth. The difference is that he will still say, because he's speaking to people who don't know any better, that the Quran speaks of Jesus. No, it doesn't. It speaks of Esau. Now, that mistake alone is enough to condemn the Quran. Mm-hmm. That the Quran speaks of Gospels. No, it doesn't. It speaks of Injil as the corruption of Evangelion. That there was a Jesus. No, there wasn't. There was a Yahusha. Contrary to the Torah, but he doesn't know that it's contrary because God said, Yahweh said, I'm God. Yahweh is my only name. A God by any other name is not God.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in a position where he can expose the religion from an absolute truthful point of view as it relates to its weakest point, which is its claim to be the God of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
Right.
And again, what's the purpose of exposing it unless you can use what you have said to lead people in the right direction. You know that about 80% of those who read Yada Yada during the first 7 or 8 years came to it because I was doing a radio show on Islam, and they went to Prophet of Doom, which I made available free, and they followed the link from there to Yada Yada.
And it was like Larry, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, so many.
Yeah.
Majority of those. Overwhelming majority. And so there is an advantage of being the one of the few blunt and bold voices on the problem is Islam.
Mm-hmm.
It's not terrorism. Do you think that I'm not tired of talking about Islam?
Well, I think you're sick of it. I mean, you're the one who did all the research to put it together the first time.
You know, do you think I'm not sick of talking about Paul?
Yeah, he's easy to get sick of.
You know, when we do the Friday shows and we're talking about Dode's insights from the 119th Psalm of the Torah, I leave those shows and you know, I'm on flying. I mean, I feel invigorated. I feel enlightened. I feel, perfected, if you will, enriched.
It is the best time of the week.
Right. It's so uplifting. But, you know, when Yosha was here, did he only cite the Torah? Did he only talk to family?
No, he attacked all the rabbis and all the
political types,
right.
And the like. Yeah,
yeah. Sadducees.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did, and he talked about what was wrong about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's our calling. I think it's what we have to do. Now, the second thing I want to say to you is that you and I share something in common with most of the covenant family, and that is that we came out of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Our good friend Don, the Marine, came out of Christianity. Larry came out of Christianity. Frank, who's got the Power on High website, came out of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing our best to discharge all of the lies of Christianity from our perspective, from our understanding. But, you know, it was a lifetime of indoctrination. And so sometimes by going over this Pauline rubbish that became part of that Christian myth, we help to discharge ourselves of it. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Scott just read something from Napoleon. Napoleon was a man who would use really any effective tool to achieve his personal ambition. So here's a man who was small in stature, large in ego, whose every move was calculated to serve his personal selfish interest. So what did Napoleon have to say about torture, Scott?
His comment on torture was, it has always been recognized that this way of interrogating men by putting them to torture produces nothing worthwhile. The poor wretches say anything that comes to their mind and what they think that I wish to know.
There you go. We ought not be doing it. All right, I wanted to continue our discussion with Kirk on why I have up to this point chosen to continue with questioning Paul, even though I know that most of those who are the most avid listeners to this program wish that I would stop. And I'm going to stop. I'm not going to go all the way through questioning Paul. I had originally wanted to get to the point where Paul makes the claim that there are two covenants, and where Paul gets to the very essence of his argument, and to repudiate all of it. I won't get that far. I'll stop when we get back to the place where Habakkuk is cited in its entirety. But Kirk, here's a thought that I know this is meaningful to me, but you know I'm not sure it's meaningful to everyone. But I wasn't just a little bit of a Christian. I was an ordained ruling elder.
Mm-hmm.
I taught and led evangelism, hands-on. I was a Stevens minister. Man, I led countless Bible studies. I really had Christianity up to the eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time, even writing yada yada, before I realized that, wait a minute, I have to pick and choose and then twist Pauline quotations to have them fit, and I have to ignore huge swaths of what he had to say before I was willing to say, that's not God. That's anti-God. And it took me a long time to not only find out that he was wrong, but then to how many times have I had to edit, yada, yada, to work all of the kind of Christian baggage that I brought to it out of the book. I mean, thank goodness Yah was patient.
We single-handedly probably raised Hammer Mill Paper Company's prices all the time.
So you know it. You know it. Right. I mean, I carried the legacy of Christianity with me, and so, you know, as I learned, I had to remove it. And now, I don't think I'm alone.
Unique, you know.
Yeah, I don't think I'm alone in this regard. I mean, most of the time, if I look at myself as just being average, normal guy that is like everybody else, similar kind of experiences and thought processes, and that which has been effective for me is likely to be effective for others, most of the time that works out okay. And I know for me that constantly reinforcing what's wrong with Pauline Christianity and ridding my mindset of this and coming to see the contrast between that and who Yahweh is and what he's offering. The difference, for example, between the Christian God and the real God, I find it helpful.
I think we all do. I mean, that's true, absolutely.
Now, most recently, we've been focusing, because of the insight that Yahweh provided for us in Devarim in 13 and in 18, on establishing oneself. And it's, you know, that's that false prophets establish themselves. And that's the first two things that Yahweh says about false prophets is, one is they're egotistical, they're self-centered and presumptuous, and number two, they establish themselves. Now, that's something that I think we ought to always keep at the forefront of our thought process as it relates to sharing Yahweh's testimony. The moment we try to establish ourselves at our own credentials, the moment we try to establish a following or elevate ourselves as somebody special, we're done. We're useless. Then we're playing for the wrong team.
Right, right.
But I think that reinforcement, and I get it, but still I think that reinforcing that has value. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Daring Miss. I want to read through Yahweh's statement in Devarim 13 to get Kirk's reaction to this. I've shared a lot of insights already regarding it. It begins, with regard to every word, which beneficially I am instructing you with accordingly. And by the way, every word would be every word in the Torah, full stop. It's all that existed at the time. And it was instruction, providing guidance and direction, Sawa. Observe it. Now, before I go on, Kirk, I have said, and I don't know if it comes across, you know, a lot of times something resonates with one person, may not resonate with another. But I have come to realize in my own, from my own perspective, and process of growing and learning, that the single most effective tool in helping me recognize the false nature of government and political lies, military malfeasance, religious lies, is understanding the Torah. Once I came to understand who God is, based upon how he introduces himself in the Torah, and what he's offering based upon the guidance in the Torah, and what he likes and what he's opposed to, Now I'm in a position to be able to have the proper perspective to look at everything. I can look at government and militaries and religions and economic schemes and the like, anybody's testimony, really, and to evaluate it from the proper perspective and know who's lying and who's not. Like, I read the everybody's explanation of that CIA intelligence summation by the Dianne Feinstein's committee, and realized that it was absolutely erroneous when it claimed that the politicians were misled, that they did not know what the CIA was doing. I knew it for a fact. That's why I said there's no chance that that's true. And it's a perspective that you get from the Torah. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is what this just said. Every word which beneficially I am providing as instruction and guidance and direction to you accordingly, observe it.
Right.
And he says that before identifying false prophets. Isn't that the most effective tool? If you have that, aren't you always in a position to know who's in conflict with what Yahweh was saying?
Well, I use it like as a, my perspective now is more like a filter. You really can't get much past me. I'm not saying I'm brilliant or anything. I'm just saying, but you can't put, it's very hard for a phony to lay a line on me and go, no, that's not true. And this is why.
Yeah.
I mean,
and Kirk, I agree with what you just said, because when I started the oral presentation as opposed to the written presentation, I was scared to death. It's not scary. That is an exaggeration. But I was worried. And the reason I was worried is that I recognize that lots of people know more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're giving an oral presentation as opposed to a written presentation where you can do all the research in the world and then provide all of your explanations and you've got a chance to think about them and correct them in the written presentation. In the oral presentation, you don't. And if you know less than somebody else knows, they can embarrass you. Now, I don't mind being embarrassed, but if I'm speaking about Yahweh, then I mind. Okay?
Yeah, sure.
Because I'm trying to convey his testimony, and I don't like to do it in a way that that causes any misinformation.
Mm-hmm. No, it's the way you like to be prepared in a debate. I mean.
Right, exactly. Now, so I realized that if I would just study to the point where I would know as much as everyone that I might encounter doing a radio program, that I would never get the radio program started. And so I made a decision that said, you know, I think understanding trumps knowledge. And once you come to understand the Torah and who Yahweh is and what he's offering, there's no amount of knowledge at that point that's ever going to be difficult for you to handle.
Knowing the stuff that you've been covering with the reasons why, what's a false prophet, if you applied that to just about any preacher, any pope, anything, you would instantly, you can dismiss them. They say, well, I'm sorry. You know,
any politician.
Any politician.
Any military officer. Any media spokesperson. I use exactly the same filter, to use your term, the same perspective, the same lens, now to look at everything. I've just decided, because it seemed reasonable to me, and it's worked beautifully for me, is that if I accept Yahweh's foundation, if I stand on it, and I use his direction as the direction is my perspective. If my perspective becomes his perspective, if my foundation is his foundation, if my basis for evaluating things is his, I'm not going to be wrong very often.
No, well, if what Yahweh says is true and you need some good translations to go by, that's paramount. That's where I changed because I didn't have really good access. And then the more I did and the more I studied, then I said, okay, this is true. Then it's real easy to say what you said years ago. You know, if this is true, then all that ain't.
That's right. Exactly.
So, you know,
and the reason that I just adopted my perspective and view and filter to be as close to his as I'm capable is because he proved that his is reliable. He proved that his was vastly superior to mine or anyone else's. And he proved it through a lot of different ways. You know, yada yada is based on prophecy, and of course the prophecy proves conclusively that he is God, and that he authored the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and therefore as God, I want to know what he has to say.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I mean, his explanations on creation, his explanations of the flood, his explanations in the covenant, his preview of what he himself did in the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuot are so brilliant, are so generous, are so good, are so beautiful, uplifting, that it just beyond the capability or the contribution of every human combined that's ever lived.
Yeah. We never get to there by ourselves.
No. And so it's what he's offering and who he is so wonderful, so convincing, so powerful, so enlightening, so uplifting, so just downright good. I've decided to accept it, and now I make no apologies for it. My view of my country, my view of politics and religion is as aligned with Yahweh's as I'm capable based upon studying his testimony.
Well, you know what you said not too long ago about if Abraham was a covenant relationship is what he offered, and then now to become a Christian, you have to start out with God failed because
mm-hmm.
he had to
yes.
come up with a New Testament. I mean, that is
right.
So absurd. You know, I
right.
never put it that way. I never thought of it that way until, you know, I started studying. And my gosh, that's
yes.
if you just... I was writing down 10 reasons, you know, in the past why you shouldn't be a Christian or why I'm not a Christian, you know, just to put thoughts in my brain. And the first one I put on the list is, you know, God failed. Therefore, you have to have a New Testament. Oh, come on. Is that the most absurd thing you've ever heard? But how else? What other rational thing could you come up with to explain what Paul was saying?
Yeah. You're like me. You're like lists. That's why I rewrote Questioning Paul, where it begins with a list of 20 things that Christians believe that are impossible to be true. And one of those 20 things is that for the New Testament to be true, then the Old Testament has to be false.
Mm-hmm.
For the New Testament to be able to save, the Old Testament has to fail in that regard. And that's the whole premise of Paul's letters, is that the Torah, prophets, and Psalms are incapable of saving anyone, that they actually enslave, and that therefore he had to present a New Testament that was able to save based upon and the gospel of grace to rescue God. In fact, he actually says that he himself was called by God to resolve God's inadequacies.
And
when you think of the preposterous nature of that, I mean, this man that can barely write, this man who contradicts himself all over the place, this man who is clearly an egomaniac and perverse, that this man was chosen by God to resolve God's own inadequacies and come up with a plan that God himself couldn't come up with, and that he has the authorization of God to say that God was impotent and that he failed in his plan. And without that, what we've just described here is absolutely essential to Christianity.
Yes.
Well, and it's preposterous. I mean, you want to tell me that the God who figured out the calculations necessary to infuse the system with enough energy to coalesce to become the universe, which was suitable to the support of life, and then the God who came up with a three-dimensional alphabet and language for the purpose of authoring life, that the God who authored the Torah, you want to tell me that God is incompetent? That God can't save? That God's plan has to be discarded and a new one has to be put in its place? Oh, come on.
No. Well, I mean, if he had, he would have just wiped it all out and started over. I mean...
Oh, you know, is it possible that when you consider the magnitude of the physical universe... And of life, that God could have made a mistake in his calculation and would need to start over. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. It doesn't diminish my respect for God whatsoever. I mean, I don't have... But, by the way, since he has the benefit of foresight, he probably would have resolved that before.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have a problem with that. It's beyond, you know, my comprehension. But for the notion that God then began and interacted with humankind and laid out his plan and said that his plan was reliable, that it was dependable, that it was his, that it would absolutely and unequivocally deliver the desired result, and that he himself led the way. And then for that to be inadequate, for that to have failed miserably, and that he had to come up with an entirely different approach? Oh, come on. It's preposterous.
Yeah.
It's so demeaning to God.
Well, you know, Go ahead, Kurt.
Go ahead.
The other thing I've written down is Christians have to ignore everything that Yosha said, virtually.
Of course. Yeah, but we'll tackle that when we return. But also think about this. If the God who authored the Torah, prophets, and Psalms can't be trusted to save you, New Testament is attributed, although falsely, to the same God, why trust him with his second plan if his first one failed? If we start where Yahweh started, if our perspective becomes his and we look at the Torah as instruction, as teaching, as guidance, and we observe its every word, recognizing that its every word is instructing us, is providing us with guidance and direction, then the first thing we're going to be able to do is to engage in the covenant, to capitalize on what God's offering us. And secondarily, we're going to be in a position to evaluate what's true and what's false, what's reliable and what is not. And Kirk, I think that's what this first statement says with regard to every word, which beneficially I am instructing you with accordingly. Observe it, closely examine and carefully consider it for the purpose of engaging in and acting upon it.
And that is
not.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, to finish this sentence, not adding to it and not subtracting from it. Now go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that adds the credence to if you change it, then look what you've destroyed. I mean, if these words are that important, to change them is just unbelievably wrong. I mean, you just destroy everything.
Yeah, how can there be a Quran or a New Testament when God said, do not add to it?
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, I mean, we get back to the Christian with the position of having their New Testament because the Torah doesn't can't save. Why would you trust the God who failed?
And further, if it does fail, if it won't work, then what are we supposed to assume? That Abraham, Moshe, Dod, Shimon, Kefi, Yaokan, these people are not part of the family?
Well, how about Yosha? That's what you mentioned at the end of the last segment.
Right. He's not part of the family.
Yeah, he was Torah observant. Right.
In fact, these people, because they actually preach this, you know, like Moshe, I mean, you are in the worst place of all.
So what you'd have to assume if you're a Christian is that everything that Yosha said in the Sermon on the Mount, his first and longest public discourse, that everything he said was wrong.
You have to be. It was worthless because the Torah can't save. And
right.
He's quoting the Torah. So
And he's saying that the Torah is going to... Don't think that I came to annul the Torah. Don't think I came to do away with the Torah. You know, and what's so amazing is that Christians will take the line, I came to fulfill it, take it out of context and says that means to do away with it. Well, first of all, that's a tortured rendition of fulfill, which is actually... Totally complete would be the proper translation of the Greek word, although he spoke Hebrew at the time. But think about this. In context, he just said, do not think that I came to do away with it. I came to fulfill it. So how can fulfill be doing away with? When the previous line is, don't think that I came to do away with it.
That's a clue.
That's a clue. I mean, oh my, it's so tortured what religious people have to do to keep their faith.
Hey, I fell for it though, and it just I had to have a truth translation to figure out what the truth was. So now that I can, yeah. I can laugh at how stupid I was.
So. Yeah, you know, I think that one of our errant translations, if your mind was really resolutely logical, even with the corrupted translations, I think all of us could have figured it out. But it's deliberately, the truth is deliberately hidden from us by the horrible translations. I'll grant you that.
And then it's reinforced by preachers and Sunday school teachers and parents and schools.
Yeah. We grew up in it.
Yeah.
Which brings us right back down to why is it that questioning Paul still has merit, even for those of us in the family? It's because it constantly helps us understand and then share with others why where we have been was wrong. Now, I want people to know it's not just that Yahweh's Torah is right. You need to know that Christianity is wrong, that it does not lead to God, that I know this does not sound plausible, but it's true. Not a single Christian is in heaven.
No.
Not one.
That's a horrible thing when you hear it the first few times, you know, when you came out of Christianity, you say,
right.
You know,
it takes your breath away.
Uh-huh.
But there's not a single Christian in heaven. And just knowing that isn't hateful. Knowing that is actually compassionate. Because it gives those who still have a chance, a chance. It opens their eyes to say, okay, if you want to refute that, have at it. See if you can refute God. But since you can't, why not instead act upon what he has said? We'll be back tomorrow.